to Johnny's. It's Tuesday the 11th of April and this is Game On. Coming up today, Paul Corry and Fergal Brennan are with us to talk football as Vera Powell's Ireland take on the USA again. And in the Champions League, it's Guardiola v Tuchel as the quarterfinals begin. In hurling, we'll hear from Niall Moran on the lessons we can take from Limerick's latest trophy win. And in golf, Jamie Burns runs the rule over John Rahm's win at Augusta and Rory's withdrawal on the PGA Tour. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. Paul Corry is with me in studio. Paul, we have another Republic of Ireland versus the USA game to come this evening. They had a respectable defeat. I don't know, to be called. Is the right thing to call defeats respectable?
I think on this occasion it is.
Yeah, I know. I think though if you're playing, no defeat is respectable, is it?
No, maybe the performance was.
Okay, we'll go with that. They had a very respectable performance in their 2-0 defeat to the USA on Saturday night, and they're playing again tonight. It's 12:30 tonight, in the early hours of the morning. Something to look forward to for anyone who is used to being up after watching all the American sports over the weekend, staying up to watch the Leitrim from New York game and then the Masters. So there's lots of people whose clocks will be set now by US sports time. Paul, it was a good performance. I'm not sure what tonight is going to bring because there are probably going to be changes on both sides. We'll be keeping an eye out to see if anything kind of comes through. Maybe from a team news point of view, Sinead Farrelly isn't going to play a role. Neither is Aoife Mannion, two players that were really important in the first game. The USA will probably make some changes as well. But I guess, look, the reality is the quality of changes that they make to the quality of changes that we make would probably be a little bit different.
You would imagine so. I think to start with Farrelly and Mannion, I mean, they did themselves no harm at all. And you would suggest, Marie, based on the performances and on, I guess, the calibre of the player, both of those women will be on the plane to Australia, you would imagine so. But I think first and foremost, when you look at the doubleheader, I think you have to respect Vera Powell's decisions to pit ourselves against the top nations. And she's done that consistently since she's taken charge. And she's obviously wanting to bring our players up to a certain level. And she feels that playing against top calibre opposition is the best way of doing it. So I have absolute utmost respect. It would have been far easier to take an easier opposition and maybe try to build the confidence with easy wins. But I like what she's done. And I think, Marie, when you actually look at the fixtures that we have to play in the World Cup, we start off by playing Australia and then we play Canada. One is in Sydney and the second game is then in Perth. So there's travel and there's going to have to be recovery taken into consideration. And if you look at what they've done here with the back-to-back double header, there's a bit of travel involved as well. I think she will want the majority of the players who she sees playing in those games against Australia and Canada to play both of these games just to get used to being up against that top quality nation and also get into that kind of headspace of having to recover very quickly and go against that type of nation. So I would expect that you'll still see the likes of McCabe, Conley, Quinn, Caldwell, Brosnan. I think a lot of them will play tonight.
Okay, well, Tony O'Donoghue did speak to Vera Powell a little bit earlier and to Megan Connolly as well. Let's hear from them.
We've developed a lot since the last time we've played them, and I think we put a great show on for ourselves and we show the steps we're taking. Yes, we want to keep growing, keep improving, and we've learned a lot from the last game, and we want to keep growing and implement some more stuff tomorrow. But yeah, I think it's the best challenge we can have going into a World Cup is play the best team in the world twice.
You know, we get the opportunity only once to play the world champion twice. So we do not give away the second game for a chance to develop in the best way possible. So we will not change a lot. Because we need to develop. Megan expressed herself very, very well. That's exactly the goal that we have. We have learned from the first game, we implement in the second game, and that's our next step to 20th of July. We are trying to make steps forward, and I think if you look at our game yesterday, I think it's the best game we ever played, to be honest. And I think that we've made 5 steps up. And that happens under the pressure of the World Cup. We embrace that, we take that on. And indeed, you cannot build Rome in one day. We have a squad that is really competitive and we want to make step further in the quality of our play.
Paul, you can see what she's trying to do now with the way that she's played. She had to operate the system that she did with such a low block for such a long time because they needed to get to a World Cup. That was the ultimate goal and they achieved that. Now there is a little bit more leeway to express themselves. you can also see why she wants somebody like Sinead Farley around the pitch, just because she brings what nobody else does. She has that calmness, that coolness. She can hang on to the ball. But she still needs players that can score. And it's like the conversation we have all the time. We saw Cara Caruso was a bit more of a target player. But it almost still feels like we're relying on that set piece, Louise Quinn, which she nearly did, coming up for a header, maybe Denise or Katie, moment of magic from them. But we know what we're doing at one end of the pitch. Do we know what we're doing at the other?
I'm not sure we fully know what we're doing. I think we're making steps. We're making progress towards getting towards that maybe a bit more expansive style of play. Listen, Marie, the performances and results have absolutely been built on clean sheets. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no getting away with that. We haven't scored an abundance of goals against nations in and around us or nations above us, and that's maybe down to the personnel, but maybe the setup of Firpo as well. I think it's very pragmatic. We play with a back five, and it's very much a flat back five, and sometimes the dependency is a little too heavy on the likes of Denise O'Sullivan mm-hmm. and Katie McCabe to come up with a moment of magic. And I think that's why getting somebody like Sinead Farley into the team just gives us another option, where maybe we've been a little bit predictable at times, and if you shut down two of our key players, well then that maybe shuts down many of our routes to go. But listen, it's not going to change much between now and the World Cup. I would still expect that when we play the likes of Australia and Canada, set pieces are still going to be our best route to go. And keeping clean sheets is absolutely going to be our best opportunity of picking up points in those two games. So I wouldn't expect that we would, you know, deviate too much away from that game plan. It's been successful to get us to this stage. Why would you go away from that? I understand maybe going into the next tournament you look mm-hmm. to become a bit more expansive and maybe blood younger players in, but I think for now sticking with what has gotten us to this point is absolutely the recipe to stick with.
And to be fair, I thought that header pain and that wing back position did add a bit of an extra dimension. She did have that little bit more freedom to attack when the opportunity came. So we're seeing glimpses of the layers that she wants to put in there. It's just, when is the right time to try and develop and evolve? And you're probably right, a World Cup, you just want results. You want to take away something tangible that you can say, well, we went there and we did this. We got there, but we still did something.
Yeah, and on that low block, like Heather Payne is a perfect example because she's so quick and she's mm-hmm. got the legs to get up and down the pitch. When you're playing that low block, you probably need people with good athleticism or pace and power to carry the ball and kind of just relieve pressure, or maybe Sinead Farley to take the ball in and just buy a pass here or there. We need to slowly get those players into the squad, but you know, 2-0 is no disrespectful mm-hmm. result against the USA. It'd be good to see if maybe we can look to build on that tonight and see if we can get some of our more creative players higher up the pitch and cause them a few more problems.
Just one other thing to add before we move on is that we've got that performance now. We've had that respectable performance and a decent result against the USA. We probably need to give the other players an opportunity as well. Well, you know, we've put the performance and the results in the bag. Mm. It would be nice to maybe see some of the girls that really want to get on the plane and are on the fringes just been given that opportunity as well, and to go out and show what they can do against a good side and put themselves into the conversation, because whether we like it or not, there are going to have to be cuts and there are people who are going to not make it. But it would be good for them to get the opportunity.
There's difficult decisions ahead, isn't there?
Correct. That's,
Difficult decisions, particularly when you start bringing players in at this late stage. Mm-hmm. I was listening to yourself and Lisa Fallon. Of course, you have to prepare for contingencies mm-hmm. of people getting injured close to the tournament. But there are players who have been part of that squad and who have developed the women's game who might miss out in this competition.
Yep, that's it. Exactly. Look, we might reassess tomorrow after we see who gets to play tonight, but there are definitely people I would love to see get a go, and we'll find out a little bit later on when that team is announced. We're going to turn our attention now to the Champions League, and I'm delighted to say that Fergal Brennan joins me on the line as well. Fergal, how are you?
Very good. And yourself?
Ah, good. We were just saying before we came on air, and I know you're not supposed to say that when you're on the radio, but before we came on air, we were just talking about all the football that's on at the moment. And the Champions League is upon us again. And we've big games, huge games tonight, really, when you think about it. Benfica and Inter Milan and Manchester City and Bayern Munich. Obviously, the second game is the one that all eyes are going to be on. It is live on RT2 television as well. And Pep and Man City and the Champions League, it's like this story that should be a fairy tale for Pep, but is it going to be? And are Bayern Munich the team that could make it all come undone for Pep tonight?
I think there's a big chance of that. Maybe not potentially just tonight, but but certainly over the two legs. Looking at his record since he's arrived at Manchester City, obviously one final appearance where he lost to Chelsea, managed by, guess who, Thomas Tuchel. And Bayern Munich and Real Madrid have everything that Manchester City arguably lack. They have that killer instinct and that huge amount of experience in really, really important games, which, try as they might, Manchester City, whether it's an issue with Guardiola, whether it's players on an individual or a collective basis, they don't have that kind of grizzled, when we get to the semi-finals or when we get to the final, we just need to win. It doesn't need to be this or this or this. We just need to win. It needs to be us walking away with the trophy at the end of the game. And that hasn't happened with Manchester City. And he was kind of irked in his press conference yesterday. He was again asked about the whole overthinking. Does he kind of wrap himself up in a bit too much tactical analysis? And he was kind of annoyed about that, because he said that when he makes a kind of left field decision and it comes off, he's a genius. And when Man City lose a game, particularly an important Champions League game, and he's maybe tried something a bit unusual, he's suddenly got it wrong. So he's showing no signs of slowing down in that sense. And I think maybe we've got his overthink out of the way already. He's playing 3-2-4-1 in 8 of the last 10 games. He's playing a centre-back in a holding midfield position. So I don't really know what else he can pull out of the bag tonight to make it even more bizarre. But I just think sometimes these huge games are won by the team that is the most comfortable in their skin, where all the players know exactly what they need to do. And that, for me, looks to be more Bayern Munich, not by a long stretch. And as I said, really don't think it'll be decided tonight. But this is a Bayern Munich team packed with experience, huge amounts of pace and goal threat in the right areas. And Manchester City, for me, despite how brilliant they've been in the Premier League, I don't feel they've learned some of the lessons of the not too distant past.
They're also going to be coming up against Joao Cancelo, and there was so much drama about him when he departed. You'd wonder, and I think everybody wondered at the time, would it come back to bite Pep in the behind? And we might find out a little bit later on. But Thomas Tuchel was asked about him when he was speaking to the media a little bit earlier on today.
When Joao Cancelo moved to Bayern Munich in January, the expectation, certainly over here, was that he would stay permanently. How likely is that scenario right now?
Wow, I cannot give you any serious answer to that, because we haven't discussed it with the club. I don't even know the conditions from the contract. At the moment, I was just focusing, happy that he is my player, because I played many times against him and I'm very well aware of his extraordinary qualities. So he changed the club now, in the new club, changed the coach. Not so easy for him, new language, new culture. New culture within the club, then a new coach again. So it's not so easy, but I'm very happy that he's with us and he can play a huge role in the end of the season and in games like tomorrow, because he has the quality, the experience to help us on this kind of level.
And it's a strange situation, given that he was playing in this system for Guardiola before he moved to join you. So can he help you in that regard? He's playing against his actual team, if that makes sense.
Yeah, he plays against his former team. These situations exist. So I hope he can manage also his emotions and is not over-motivated, over-excited, but on the other hand, also not too friendly and too shy. So hopefully he can manage his emotions to be ready. But I know that he is looking forward to it. He knows the system very well. But you know, I would say that I know the patterns also very well. So it's not enough to know it. A lot of people know that smoking is not healthy and still they smoke. So it's about what we do. It's not about what we know.
That's a very interesting analogy from Tuchel there, talking about Man City and how Cancelo is going to get on tonight, Paul. And he does make good points about the emotion, because you could tell that he didn't leave on the best terms. It was obviously something going on with himself and Pep, and I'm sure there's lots of unresolved things going on there as well. But given, I suppose, his experience and look what we've seen him do and how consistent he's been over the last while, and also how much Man City missed him when he left, you'd have to think that he's going to relish a game like tonight.
It was the strangest transfer in at the January transfer window, because it happened out of absolutely nowhere, and the only sort of suggestion you can have is that there was some falling out between himself and Pep Guardiola, because as Fergal mentioned there, you know, one of the centre halves is filling in as a midfielder, and then when they don't have the ball, slots back into a back four. You would think that is tailor made for João Cancelo, with just how comfortable he is on the ball, picking up those kind of areas in front of the back three and knitting the play together and then slotting back into a right back position. So the only sort of reasonable answer you can have is that there was a falling out between himself and Guardiola, and I'm sure that he would love to get one over on Man City tonight. And I heard in an interview when Tuchel got the job that he was kind of hoping that Tuchel would be able to help him be on the right side of a Champions League win, having been knocked out by Chelsea in the final 2 years ago. So I think it's going to be a really interesting game. I think if you take out Manchester City's previous history in the Champions League of making mistakes at vital moments, and you purely focus on form in the league over the last couple of weeks, I think you would go with Man City. I just think they've been astonishing the last couple of weeks. I think there's probably a little more solidity in that back three when you put in the presence of Akanji. If you think about the two goals they gave away against Real Madrid last year, maybe with somebody like himself and his presence and his aggression in the air, they might have seen it through. And don't forget that Haaland's in this Champions League squad this year, and his form is just scintillating.
And I think even if you look at Bayern's defence over the last while as well, Fergal, in the last 16 matches they've only had 6 clean sheets and they've conceded 2 or more on 5 occasions. So if you're a Man City player, or if you're a Haaland, you're licking your lips at that.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, in terms of Erling Haaland, he's a perfect example. He's been absolutely sensational since he's come to Manchester City, and he'll score the goals that will ensure that the treble remains on track for however long that continues. But I still think, as I said before, I still think some of the issues that City and Guardiola have had in the past are not fully resolved. We know they can beat anybody. I think kind of punch for punch, they're probably the best team in the world. But the best team in the world doesn't always necessarily win these games or win these major tournaments. It's the team that's the best at winning, if that makes kind of sense. But I just have a kind of hunch for Bayern over the two legs. And I think particularly if they don't come off the end of tonight's game and they've got 2 or 3 goals down, I think if they've got a positive enough result to take to the second leg, I think they'll be really, really confident and justifiably so, because they are a really good team. You're right, they probably concede a few more goals than Tuchel would like, but they are sensational just as much as Manchester City.
The other game tonight, Benfica and Inter Milan. Benfica, really the form team coming into it, unbeaten in Europe this season. Paul, and have lost just 3 times in all competitions. But heading into a game like this, it's, you know, it's almost a mirror image of Manchester United, Manchester City and Bayern Munich. When you get to this stage, sometimes it doesn't even matter what you've done beforehand.
Yeah, it can be, and it can come down to just a moment of magic from, you know, an individual. But I think the Benfica story in general is just incredible. The way they, you know, they sell players every single season, and they sell top players to top European clubs, and they seem to be able to produce and recruit to maintain a level of performance that sees them be competitive both in Europe and also in the Portuguese league. And if you look at this team, I've watched them a couple of times, and I thought they were really good in the Champions League. I haven't seen much of their league form, but if you even look at some of the players, Ramos, who was very good in the World Cup, João Mário, Rafa Silva, and then they've got Otamendi at the back, they're a really good unit. Maybe when you look at the names and individuals on paper, many people might not recognise as household names across Europe, but I think when you look at the performances, Marie, they're really good going forward. And You kind of look at the opposition tonight, Inter Milan, who are struggling in Italy at the moment. Mm-hmm. They're on the favourable side of the draw. If they were to get a good win tonight, I would certainly expect them to go through from that tie.
Inter, Fergal, on a 6-match winless run, trying to turn it around tonight will be difficult.
It will, and I'd agree pretty much with everything that Paul said there about Benfica, and in terms of the model that they operate on, there might be a couple of players being vultured away from them this summer if they can get into the semi-final and win the Portuguese league. Inter, it just hasn't really clicked for them at this really important time in the season, and they're trying to fight across 3 fronts. They're trying to get into the top 4 in Serie A. They're still in the Coppa Italia and obviously still in the Champions League. But similarly to Bayern Munich, albeit at home for Benfica, I think if they can win at home tonight with a fairly healthy lead, I don't think Inter at the moment have that kind of fear factor that they can instill into other teams, that when they go to the San Siro, it's going to be really difficult. I think Benfica will fancy the chances, and justifiably so. Domestically, it all starts to kind of make a difference as well. Benfica know that they can't obviously take the foot off the gas in the Portuguese league, but they've got a good lead out at the top. If they can get this boxed off, they can kind of by measures then start to focus on the second leg, because they know that the league is getting ever closer. Whereas Inter Milan don't have that luxury. They've got a huge amount of games, and they're not really fulfilling expectations as it stands.
Let's move on, and I want to talk about the championship in a minute, but I don't know if either of you saw Wrexham and Ben Foster and the penalty save. It just seems like it's magic what's happening there, Fergal, and you know, just the glamour and the Hollywood, and even look, anyone who follows Ben Foster on YouTube knows that he's probably a bigger YouTuber star than he is footballer, but it's all just adding to it.
It is, and I have to be honest, I watched the second half of this game. A friend of mine texted me and said, you need to stick it on. Whether you're interested or not, you need to watch it. And the penalty save was was amazing. You did get the absolute sense that it was written in the stars. Mm-hmm. It took an age to actually take the penalty. And then Ben Foster shows why he's a former Premier League goalkeeper and makes the save. Notts County were the closest to them in the table. You'd anticipate now that Wrexham just ease away, get themselves back into the Football League. And I wouldn't quite say the sky is the limit, because there's huge amounts of strides to be made to even kind of get up into the EFL and up towards the Championship. But it's an example of how difficult it can be to get out of this level of the pyramid. But if you have investment, if you have this feel-good factor around the team and the club, and you have these huge moments, I don't want to say Hollywood moment because that'd be a bit of a cliche, but if you can have these moments, then that's what does it. And I think they're going to get promoted. They'll probably have another influx of money in the summer to get back into the Football League, and we see where we go in the next few years.
Yeah, well, one thing's for sure, Ben Foster's YouTube following is probably going to get a lot bigger over the next little while as he continues on that journey. Let's have a look at the Championship, and we saw over the weekend, Paul, that there's lots of twists and turns. Let's start with Burnley though, and earning promotion, and from an Irish point of view, it's very positive.
It is. I mean, if you just want to take one player in particular, mm-hmm. who's been vitally important to Stephen Kenny over the last 36 months is Josh Cullen, I should say. Vincent Kompany obviously saw enough of him when he was coaching in Belgium to take him to Burnley, and he's been ever present in that Burnley midfield of just kind of protecting the back four and knitting the play from back to front. So one thing we have lacked, particularly over the last number of years, is having players play at the top level in the Premier League. So if we can blood another one or two, whether it be from Sheffield United or from Burnley into next season's Premier League, it will certainly bode well for Stephen Kenny and for Josh Cullen. But I think the job as a whole, Marie, I'm not sure a huge number of people would have backed Burnley to go up automatically when Vincent Kompany got the job. There was a bit of turnover in player. Maybe some of the players who would have been associated with Burnley in the Premier League went out the door, and he brought in maybe some of his own players who he thought fit the bill, and younger players as well. And I think the job there he has done is very, very impressive, and his stock is very high right now, that if a job, and there would be plenty of jobs available, it seems, in the summer, do not be surprised if he picks up one of them, because it's a very difficult league to get out of, and he seems to have done it very easily with that squad.
Yeah, he really has, and there's so much positive noises coming out of different players, former players and teammates, Meds as well, about him, and obviously from Burnley itself. So let's have a look further down. So Burnley promoted, second place are Sheffield United. They're 14 points behind, and then you have Luton and Middlesbrough as well in the hunt, trying to get those spots. How do you think it's going to play out, Fergal?
I think we could genuinely have a situation where two, if not three, of the teams that are in the playoff spots are ones that have never played in the Premier League before, which would be pretty exciting. Luton, Millwall will be in that block. Preston are knocking on the door as well. I think, again, to steal another bit of a cliche, it's about form, kind of 40 to 46 games or 42 to 46 games. If you can come in flying where you've been winning games and just kind of just climbing up the ladder and up the ladder and up the ladder and finishing fifth or sixth. I remember reading something last season that I think the most common finish from the playoffs that have been promoted is fifth. It's actually quite rare that the third place team goes up, because normally they're battling for second, they lose out, and the bubble kind of bursts a little bit. And looking at it, and particularly again, as you mentioned there with Cullen for Burnley, from an Irish perspective for Preston, that'd be a big positive. We don't know how many of the Irish internationals that are there now will still be there next season, but in terms of getting them up, or potentially getting them up or getting them into the playoffs, it would bode really well. Tom Cannon's probably the big name banding around at the moment. 6 goals in 6 games. Remains to be seen what Everton's plan for him in the summer would be. Wouldn't be surprised if Preston are interested in him again, that Everton and Sean Dyche let him go again. But it's going to be really interesting in the next couple of weeks. And form-wise, Preston are the team in form. If they can just maintain that for, let's say, until the end of April, I think they've got a huge chance of getting into the playoffs.
Go Go on, Paul.
I'm glad you asked Fergal that question, because it is a lucky dip, isn't it? It really is a lucky dip, because if you look at Millwall are sitting on 62 points, and then you can go all the way down, so that's a fifth position, down to 11th position, West Brom sitting on 57 with a game in hand.
Wow.
It could literally be, you don't know who's going to be in that playoff come the end of the season. But I like Middlesbrough. I think Michael Carrick's done an incredible job there. He's turned them around. They struggled under Chris Wilder, and they've got that type of form that Fergal has mentioned there, that you could just see them taking that into the playoffs and being successful.
At the bottom of the table then, Fergal, a little bit of news from Reading. So former Republic of Ireland international Lorne Hunt has been appointed as the interim manager. They got rid of Paul Ince this morning because they've had such a bad run, and they're fighting for survival, really. Lorne Hunt, obviously such a long association with Reading, but a difficult role to take on.
It is, and if it's a tough one to pick who's going to get a promotion playoff in terms of predicting who's going to go down is almost difficult, because probably from 18th down, which would be Rotherham, all the way down to Wigan, it's going to be a scrap between a clutch of teams. And in terms of Hunt coming in on interim charge, you can only hope that, similarly to a lot of what's going on in the Premier League, that he's able to just rally the players. Very simple message: we've got 5 games left between now and the end of the season, just fight and fight and fight. We haven't got time to overcomplicate the situation. Paul Ince has gone. He's obviously kind of left under a bit of a cloud. He was very annoyed the fact that he was sacked. His quote when he was leaving was saying that Guardiola or Klopp could be here and they wouldn't get any better out of this team, which might have to, I don't know, pin that to the dressing room for the next 5 games before now and the end of the season. They've got a chance of getting out. I think form-wise, Blackpool and Wigan are probably gone, but it's just so tight. Two wins from 5 games could be enough, and that's not a Hail Mary of an ask. It's a potential, but when you're in the type of form that they are, they haven't won in 5, it is difficult.
They've still got a chance though, because QPR are an absolute free fall. Since Michael Beale left that club and Gareth Ainsworth has gone in, I think Michael Beale left when they're in the playoffs, and now they're sitting in 20th, only 2 points above Reading. So I would be very worried for QPR that they could go down.
Okay, we'll be keeping an eye on that over the next little while. And Fergal, just before we finish up, a word on Dean Smith. He's agreed terms with Leicester City on a short-term deal until the end of the season. They're 19th at the moment in the Premier League, 2 points from safety. We talk about difficult jobs. This is a difficult one as well.
Oh, yes. And Leicester have joined the growing trend of sacking a manager and bringing in a relegation specialist. But in terms of Dean Smith, it's a toss of a coin. He kept Aston Villa up, but he also went down with Norwich. Just been looking at some of his numbers from when he was at Villa. I think he got 8 points from his last 4 games, which possibly would be enough to see Leicester safe. And I just think it's a very similar scenario, albeit Premier League to Championship. Things are so tight now that it is just about a simplified message and motivating the right players. But Leicester do have, for me, more talented players than probably anyone else in the bottom 6, particularly in attacking areas. If you can get them a little bit tighter defensively, they've got better players in attacking areas and goal scoring areas than the teams around them. But form is against them, but they've got a little bit more breathing space in the Championship sides. They've got 8 games between now and the end of the season. So I think Leicester are in with a fighting chance for sure.
Nice easy start this Saturday. Away to Man City.
Oh yeah. Gosh. Right. Straight into the fire. Fergal, thank you so much for joining us. Paul, stay with me because I do want you to keep an eye on any team news that comes in. We're going to take a very quick break now, though. Stay with us. We'll be talking hurling with Niall Moran very shortly.
Game on.
Hurling.
Now, welcome back. It's time to turn our attention to hurling. I'm delighted to say that Niall Moran joins me on the line. Niall, the dust has probably settled now at this stage on Limerick's awesome performance against Kilkenny. For anyone that isn't from Limerick, how worried should they be about the trajectory of Limerick hurling at the moment?
Impressive to say the least throughout the league, Marie. I suppose Sunday's result kind of capped their dominance in the league. I suppose kind of an easy 11-point victory. But one kind of caveat I'd probably throw at them, Marie, is I wonder, as teams can take in stock maybe of the demise of Waterford, Dublin, Leicester as the year wore on, whether for that they crashed and burned a little bit earlier than normal or whether things just went wrong. But I just think teams have been holding back, and I think there's evidence of that again on Sunday. I thought after like 50 minutes left in the game, I thought 50 minutes gone in the game, there was 5 points in it. It's still very much in the melting pot. So Dickie Quaid pulled off 2 saves there from Mossy Keown and Billy Ryan, and okay, I know Limerick went away and pulled a goal, but at that stage it was probably crying out for maybe the influence of TJ Reid to come into it. And I suppose on that same time, 52 minutes, we saw Derek Ling removing probably his most influential player in the game, Adrian Mullen. So look, I suppose maybe it's I just get that sense the teams have been holding back to a degree, but that's not to take away from Limerick right the way throughout the league. John Kiley has used upwards of 34 players, probably even 35 players nearly, I'd say, after Sunday. And it's been hugely beneficial for him because he's really created strength and depth in nearly all his positions.
And even now, when you look at the players coming through, the young players now, and we talk about conveyor belts, and it seems like the one in Limerick is constantly moving, and that is often a flaw in maybe other systems or other counties where they've had success, but they haven't developed what's coming through. But there doesn't seem to be that problem in Limerick at all.
Yeah, we're fortunate at the moment, Maria. Look, it's just whether it's by design or by coincidence, but look, we're fortunate that even on a day like Sunday, like in Colin Neal and Colin Coughlin, they were very, very impressive. Two guys are relatively new to it, so it's very positive. So that culture has been created by John, that he's given lots of guys their head and they've taken it, but yet it didn't guarantee him a start. Like Sinhal Hulahin was exceptional against Clare, who wasn't on the panel the last day, so I suppose there's huge competition within that group. But again, look, so that was, when you look Kilkenny a decade ago, I suppose that was, that was one of the traits that they definitely had. And maybe in Kilkenny's case, when you compare it maybe with the nature of some of the subs that they brought on Sunday, like they wouldn't have been in the same calibre maybe as what Limerick had on offer to bring on. But as I said, Marie, I just take it with a caveat there. I just think there's a lot of stormy seas coming down the road in Championship, none more so maybe than in Munster with your own Clare and teams like that. So, look, it's great. I'd say the cup is well put away and the back train tonight. It is what it is.
Yeah, because John Kiley wasn't even that happy after the performance. There was a lot of wides, particularly in the second half, 20 wides I think they had. But just to, before we move on from what's happening behind the scenes in Ireland, and I know the schools are obviously doing a brilliant job as well with developing players, and there's the academy system that seems to be in full flight all of the time. Is it designed, do you think? Like, is there just a concerted group of people now making sure that there is no fall off, that there is no drop in standards the whole way down through the ranks?
Yeah, so look, oftentimes here in Limerick, Marie, like Limerick going back to the 30s, and I know that went 80 years ago, it's lifetimes ago, but I suppose we're a dominant hurling county, and for whatever reason, maybe called 1940 back into this group in 2018, we've been hit and miss, and we've had very, very good teams, very, very good hurlers, but maybe to amass just two All-Irelands in that time didn't do just reward for the service that was given. But I suppose what maybe you're finding now is that, look, a lot of lessons have been learned, and by God, we've all made a lot of mistakes on and off the pitch over the years, and it's probably a lot of lessons have been learned. And I suppose the one word that maybe is probably for where Limerick are at the moment is probably maybe trying to create that legacy. I know I said in another piece there during the week that the Maoris often have a phrase about be the tree you'll never see, and I suppose that's kind of what the culture that John is doing there, just for any young lad growing up, whatever else, they know nothing else, only Limerick winning and operating in professional standards. And I suppose in time to come, the proof of the pudding will be in 15 or 20 years' time if that comes to pass. And I suppose the hope that a county like Limerick might have is that you kind of move into what will be known as a top four, not just the big three of Cork, Tip and Kilkenny, and maybe that'll be the overriding legacy when we reflect on it when we're grey and old.
Is there maybe extra care being taken as well now because there's so much competition with rugby?
Yeah, I suppose, look, it's probably turned full circle in that, and I suppose maybe I'm not privy fully to what goes on amongst rugby. I know that they've made strides in recent months in that, and there's a couple of programmes initiated, but I suppose they've kind of fallen asleep behind the wheel maybe for the last decade. And I think maybe in like Limerick City here, you see kids actively going around with hurleys, and I suppose, look, that's success breeds success, and that can all turn in a couple of years as well. But yeah, look, at the moment it's not as the competition from rugby, I suppose, isn't like it for the hearts and minds. It's probably we're kind of winning that battle at the moment, but so that's very flippant. And look, also as well, Marie, I suppose in a county like Limerick, a city like Limerick, even like we work in tandem. Most guys play both soccer, even into it as well, soccer, rugby, hurling, and I don't think it's a competition it's more so just probably trying to have the setups that you can encourage guys when they get to the age of 18, 19 that they might choose to perform at elite level in hurling as opposed to rugby, and where the rewards obviously are tangible with professionalism. But look, I said it's a good place to be now, Marie, but again, we probably learned a lesson in 19 after a brilliant Munster final victory, and we got caught by Kilkenny and should Limerick not qualify for a semi-final or final of a Munster and All-Ireland, then everything that's gone in the last 2 months would be redundant.
What I love about this Limerick team, Niall, is that they have made every position on the pitch a desirable position to play in, because often, you know, if you were a cornerback or a fullback, nobody really cared that much about you. And it was all about the forwards, maybe all about the midfielders. But if you're in that fullback line, you're one of the players that the kids want to be too.
Yeah, it's interesting. I suppose, if I know me, your own lads are involved in Shamrock Rovers, but as one of the top academies in the country. But I suppose in years gone by, Ajax over was always considered the total football, and one thing they did with all their players when they were inside in academies is that they exposed them to every position. Mm. So just when they got to adult level, that they were proficient in what was needed, and so they also had appreciation of other positions. So the centre half knew exactly what kind of a ball to play to the centre mid, and so on and so forth. And I suppose with John, I suppose by having players that are able to move the pieces, he's not affected by, say, like on Sunday, Declan Hannan wasn't able to play straight away. He was able to keep the mobility of Dan Morrissey to win at six, and it was a seamless transition. So look, that's credit to him. And but look, I suppose for the other teams, Marie, again, without hogging it about Limerick, sometimes you get sick of listening, talking about it and using superlatives. Like, do you know what I mean? I do think that for teams to attack them, they probably have to stay true to what they believe in themselves. And like one night thing that Kilkenny, I suppose there were times when they would have delivered long and fast normally, and they kind of overplayed the ball at times. And I do think Derek Ling will learn an awful lot from that. And do you know what I mean? So there is learning in it. And I think maybe if teams stay true to themselves a little bit more, they might just get even a little bit more success.
Yeah, and look, I guess one thing about management and all you're involved in the skills, it's not an easy thing to come in and take over a team and try and imprint your stamp and get them to play the way that you want them to play and almost realise your vision. It takes a little bit of time. You have to build it up. You have to form those relationships. And you mentioned the word learnings there, and you know, look at Derek Ling and Henry Shefflin as well in Galway. It doesn't come easy very quickly, and sometimes it just takes a little bit of time and a little bit of patience to try and get to where you want to get to. But I guess the unfortunate thing is then you have a team like Limerick who are so far ahead.
Yeah, look, they're ahead for now, Marie. But look, again, it can all become undone. And like I said, there's an interesting couple of months ahead. And I suppose one of the most interesting things there as well, Marie, is that I obviously know Tipper coming down the road here in a couple of weeks' time, and that'd be a mighty game. But probably just to reiterate, the stance that's already been made in relation to the Dylan Quirk Foundation, I really just hope that there's a major U-turn from the GAA. Like, it's very disappointing. We're all stakeholders in the GAA. We all operate under the umbrella of the GAA, be it as players, coaches, fans, parents, every element of it. And I think the one thing that has always, I know, this week there's a huge tragedy in Laois GAA with the tragic death of David Brown, and no different to the rest of the community. I'd like to sympathise with his family. But I suppose one thing that we always see is that in times of tough times that we always rally behind each other. And like on a local level, like we definitely support the charities that are so beneficial in our day-to-day lives. I know here in our own community, we have a cancer support group, Castle Connolly and Montpellier Cancer Support Group, and our own club has been very good in trying to promote their cause. And I know on the ground how appreciative those people are. And I also know on the ground the amount of people whose lives they've touched. And I think in the case of the Dylan Quirk Foundation, do you know what I mean? Like the money that they're trying to raise is designed to save lives. And I often wonder, and when we hear of decisions being made in the GAA, we never hear people's faces being put behind us. It's the GAA. Well, if it's the GAA, then I'm a member of the GAA, and you're a member of the GAA, and I know what we both want in the sense of that. So I really hope that these people kind of see fit to give it the outing that it deserves when Limerick play Tipperary, and that we can all put our support behind it, both financially and morally and everything else.
Yeah, I'd totally agree with you, Niall. Sometimes it's very hard to make sense of some of the decisions that are made in HQ, and this is definitely one of them. And you nailed it there when you talked about the importance of the GAA to community and to communities, and how the GAA belongs to all of us. Every single volunteer and person that gives their time and gets involved and gives back should probably have more of a say in things like this when decisions are being made. And I actually think that about a lot of decisions. I know that you have your Congress and you have your representatives, but sometimes I think going down to communities that are affected and seeing what things mean to them and how decisions affect people directly can go a long way and should go a long way to forming a decision on things like that. Now, I'll leave it there because I think that's a very important note to finish on. We'll see what the next little while holds in relation to that, and also what it holds in relation to Limerick and who will be lifting the steps of the Hogan and taking home that that Liam McCarthy Cup right now. Anyway, it's hard not to picture it without the green and white on it.
Yes, we'll be seeing you. Long way to see you.
Thanks, and I'll talk to you later.
Game on.
Hurling.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It's time to talk golf after the end of the Masters, which saw John Rahm crowned champion. But a lot has happened since then, and I guess we should really start our golf conversation with the news of Rory McIlroy withdrawing from this week's PGA Tour event, the RBC Heritage at Hilton Head in South Carolina. Rami Burns, ex-European Tour pro, joins us on the line. Did this news, Rami, of Rory withdrawing from the PGA Tour event catch everyone by surprise?
I think so, Marie, probably because of the sort of the new rules in regards to many tournaments say. The guys are supposed to play, and these new events that have been upped with their money, etc. But you know, I think he was allowed to lose one, but possibly this is going to be the second one he'll pull out of. But after his showing last week, I'm sure he's very disappointed, and the head's probably down, and it's disappointing, obviously, for all the people at Harbortown, because Rory's a massive draw in the United States, as we all know. We can't imagine him not being there. But unfortunately, you know, it's very difficult to win a Grand Slam, and I'm sure he's very disappointed, and I'm sure he just didn't have the mindset to give it his full go at Harbortown. It's just been a disappointing Masters week, especially missing the cut, you know, because like, you know, the way Rory plays in par fives, the length he has, it'll be a disappointing week, and unfortunately, there's a no-show this week for Rory, and he'll just have to get back up and get back on the horse and try and start galloping again and bringing the season, the start of the season, back into good things looking forward.
Yeah, it was so disappointing for him, Rami. And I think, look, there's always expectation on him, but when it's the one that eludes you, it's even more difficult. But just the poor performance, because, you know, he's had form for the last little while, but what would you put it down to?
Well, last July, he had a great chance, the final round, to win the Open. Him and Hovland played together. They didn't get going. Cameron Smith ran the table. He won it. It was a very disappointing moment for all golf fans, Rory, obviously. And then he goes off, wins the FedEx. He has a huge sort of season, you know, the huge season, say, from May right through to September, October. And then his fall season, he didn't really play a lot of golf. And in my own opinion, now this is just my opinion, and Rory's my favourite golfer, probably next to Tiger Woods, or they're very close, one and two. You know, it's nine months since he's played a major at the Open. He won Dubai, probably not playing his best golf. Disappointing in Los Angeles, disappointing in Arizona. The match play, he showed some strength again, started with a new driver, started ripping the ball again, but John Rahm, you know, a disappointing sort of May, June, July, August. Then he goes out, wins the Spanish Open in the off-season, wins in Abu Dhabi, goes to Hawaii and wins in Los Angeles, plays in San Diego. You know, he's been trending massively. And suppose it's nearly as an opposite side. And, you know, we know of all the players who've tried to win Grand Slams. Not only Rory's trying to win a Masters, he's trying to win a Grand Slam, make history. I think there's five players have ever won a Grand Slam. We see with Jordan Spieth every year, we see Jordan Spieth trying to do a Grand Slam as well. And, you know, it's a very difficult thing. We've seen Sam Snead never won a US Open, you know, Phil Mickelson never won a US Open to complete the Grand Slam. Arnold Palmer never won a PGA Championship. So that added pressure. And I'm sure Rory has done everything he can with his mind, with his golf swing, with everything that he's, you know, preparation, going to Augusta beforehand. I know his caddy's phenomenal, does a great job for him. You know, he never misses a beat. You know, his management team never miss a beat. But unfortunately, you have to be in the groove. And I think John Rahm is just one of them players that at this side of the season is in a phenomenal groove, and it's very, very difficult to beat a golfer that is having a purple patch. And all the golfers throughout history have always had purple patches, and John Rahm seems to be in that now. And unfortunately, Rory isn't in that purple patch at the moment, but that's not to say it won't happen in the future.
So John Rahm, he did look like when he got it under control that he was going to be able to go all the way in, and he certainly delivered. And look, he spoke brilliantly afterwards and what it meant to him and his family and the importance of Seve Ballesteros, his idol, and the how he inspired him and all the rest. The only thing I'd say about John Rahm is that when Rory was out doing all the talking about Liv and all the rest, we didn't hear much from John Rahm. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, look, I've done a lot of open radio, did a lot of Ryder Cup radio, and did a little bit of radio for Sirius XM in the United States, and I've stood in practice grounds, and John is a very, it's up and get going. He's a work guy. He's just getting up and going to work. He goes on the practice ground with his caddy. There's not an awful lot of other people around him. He just seems to get on with his golf, plays his golf, you know, keeps his mouth closed to certain directions. His historian of the game. He just is one of those quiet guys that just stays in the corner. He hasn't spoken out a lot. But you got to remember, Rory is a massive, massive athlete. You know, he's a Nike athlete. He holds a lot of weight in tournaments and crowd and, you know, sorry, not Nike, I mean TaylorMade, I should say TaylorMade, and also Nike clothing athlete. And he's a representation, suppose, of taking over from the Tiger Woods mantle. And a lot of people just want to see him win, and he's part of the PGA Tour committee now. I think he's the chairman. He has a huge responsibility, and I think he sees the PGA Tour. He's nearly adopted American at this stage. He's married to an American lady, etc. His kid is American now, and suppose he has a responsibility has been put on his shoulders for a spokesman for the PGA Tour. And, you know, with the Live Golf, and whether you agree with it or disagree with it, it's there. I'm not sure if it's there to stay. His time will tell that. But with all that going on, all these meetings and players' meetings, and suppose to a certain degree, his eye, suppose, has been taken, his mind, you know, it's probably like doing two jobs or maybe two and a half jobs. And John has sort of just stayed in the shade and just walked along nice and quietly, and he's picked himself up four tournaments since the start of the season, and he's number one golfer in the world now by a lot. And Butch Harmon did say that last week on television. You know, we have Scheffler, who's playing phenomenal golf. At certain times the putter was cold there, but you know, golf is tough, and the guys at the top are very, very, very gritty competitors. And we know Rory is as good as these golfers. We've seen it. He's proved it. He's won 22 PGA tournaments, four majors, no majors in almost 9 years. But, you know, John Rahm, it's his day. He's number one amateur golfer in the world back, you know, 3 or 4 years ago for 60 weeks. He's won Eisenhower individuals. You know, he's represented Spain. He went to Scottsdale. He won the Ben Hogan Award twice. He went to college in the United States. And we all know how good he is. We all know how good he can be. And with these sort of three top dogs, if you want to call them that, at the top of the tree at the moment, it's 1 week, it's one guy, and the next week it's another guy, and you need the edge. And in my opinion, John Rahm has an all-round game. He has an all-round edge, whether it's driving left or right. And then we had heard from various sources he was working on the draw. He stood up on the 13th hole, which had length of the tee box, and he just stood up and produced a draw down the middle of the fairway. Phenomenal shot. It was almost game, set, match there. He just had to walk in, really. Brooks Koepka never put any pressure on him, really, from the whole way around. And he played a sort of a tiger round. Mm-hmm. Didn't do much wrong. Didn't do an awful lot right. But did everything the way it was supposed to, and picked up a green jacket. So, you know, the question is, can Rory get himself mentally prepared and maybe walk away a little bit from the representing the PGA Tour? And we've all these accelerated events now, these 20 million euro purses. There's a lot of demand on Rory McIlroy in golf. He's, you know, it sort of starts with him, and then it branches itself out. So Rory's a smart kid. He's a great young kid, and he I'm sure his team and himself will work something together. And we've seen in the past with Rory, you know, he nearly needs to go down to the bottom. We've seen it many times, and then he rises up, and maybe this is another bottom where he's got. But it's not a bottom. He's the third, second best golfer in the world, but we're calling it a bottom because he hasn't won a Grand Slam. But just remember, and very few people have been able to say this in life, like, trying to win a Grand Slam is a massive, massive more pressure than trying to win a major. Yeah. You know, he's trying to complete something that very few people have ever done in their lifetime.
Yep, that is very well said. Raimi Burns, thank you so much for joining us. We are almost out of time, Paul Curry. Any team news before we finish up from the Bayern Man City game?
We have both teams in, Marie. One change for Man City from the team that played Southampton. So that looks like Ederson in goals, Akanji, Diaz, Ake, Stones, Rodri, Grealish, Gundogan, De Bruyne, Silva and Haaland. So Bernardo Silva in for Riyad Mahrez. The Bayern Munich team, Sommer, back four of Alphonso Davies, De Ligt, Upamecano, Pavard, Goretzka and Kimmich in midfield, and then a front four of Sané, Musiala, Coman and Gnabry. And the last stat I'll leave you with, Haaland, 25 games of Champions League, 33 goals. I fancy him to score tonight, Marie.
Okay. Paul Curry, thank you so much for joining us. That's all we have time for. I'll be back tomorrow reflecting on tonight's games and looking ahead to tomorrow night's ties as well. Betty De Silva is up next. RTE 2FM.